Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome everyone to Podcast on a Pole here on the W2M Network. I'm Jeremy Lambert with Sam Arcady. What's up, buddy?
Nothing much. I'm actually pretty excited to talk about what was a surprisingly great card.
That's right. We're here to talk about the Fate of the Furious trailer.
I actually would love to talk about that.
It was a surprisingly good card. We had The Rock against Vin Diesel and The Rock against Jason Statham. We're going to have Charlize Theron against Michelle Rodriguez and Vin Diesel against everyone. It's a fantastic card.
The only thing that stuck out with me was Vin Diesel making out with Charlize Theron, however you want to pronounce her family name.
With dreads. Charlize Theron with dreads.
That woman is,
she's spectacular. She's,
pretty much.
Yeah. We're going to talk about UFC 206 as well.
Hold on. Before we do, does Vin Diesel write this? Like, isn't he in charge of everything right now? I'm pretty sure he wrote, I guess he's not booking, the whole turning his back on his family thing just so he can make out with Charlize Theron. That's my theory.
Well, now we know why The Rock, he was so heated in real life during the movie.
Oh, yeah, that's the unprofessionalism.
Yeah.
That's right.
It all makes sense now.
I mean, in fairness, though, The Rock is a man, so he needs to understand if you have two options, either you make out with Charlize Theron or you don't make out with Charlize Theron, I don't think you have much of a choice.
I can't wait for this movie. I have to see what makes Dom Toretto turn on his family, besides the power of Charlize Theron.
Dom Toretto. Shut up, dude. You're obnoxious. Your love for this franchise is unbearable. Dom Toretto. You're even referring to him by his character's name. Jesus Christ. I absolutely loathe this franchise. I actually enjoyed the first two movies, including the one with freaking Tyrese. Is it Tyrese or Tyreek?
It's Tyrese. It's not Tyreek.
Oh. I don't know. Like, he's a crappy actor. I don't even have to remember his name.
It's Tyrese.
Okay, yeah. I mean, though, Eva Mendes was in that movie, so...
Yeah. She's fantastic.
She is fantastic. Although, it says a lot that she's no longer the prettiest girl to appear in the Fast and Furious franchise.
That is true.
That honor goes to Ronda Rousey, of course.
It's a great franchise. I don't know how you don't like it.
I'll say this. In the first movie, Joanna... Give me her family name. Jacek? Oh, no. Sorry. Confused my metaphors.
Jordana Brewster?
Yeah, Jordana, not Joanna. I'm on fire with these names.
Yeah.
She was actually really, really pretty in her prime back then.
She's very cute, but now she has kids in the movie, and her husband left her, I guess.
Wait, what? Isn't her... Well, her husband died in real life, so the movie story is that he left her?
Well, we don't know. At the end of the last movie, Paul Walker's character, Brian, drove off in a separate direction from Dom. And so we don't know what happened to Paul Walker's character, Brian.
Well, I would have actually forgiven you for saying Brian, because for the longest, pretty much until he died, God bless his soul, I used to call him Brian Walker. Because, like, that was the only movie I know him from. I mean, I watched his... there's this one movie he had with Jessica Alba where he's diving into the blue.
Never saw that movie, but I've seen all the pictures of Jessica Alba from that movie.
Ah, you're a pervert.
That movie, did you see it? I bet it was terrible. And you're a diving expert.
Yeah, that's exactly why I saw it. There was a tiger shark and there was diving. So I was like, all right, I mean, I'm going to watch it. But yeah, it was so bad, dude.
Is there a good like Jessica Alba movie? I mean, let's be honest, she's not a good actress.
I'll tell you, what's the movie's name?
Sin City was good.
Then the one where Casey Affleck is doing her doggy. what's that movie called? Not Killing Me Softly. Something along those lines. Hold on, I need to see that. I have a story related to that movie.
I can't wait for this.
There was a girl who
The Killer Inside Me.
The Killer Inside Me. It's not killing me. So it has something to do with killing. And I think what a subtle pun with the inside me thing. All right. Yeah. So anyway, basically, long story short, there was a girl I was really trying to get with for a long time, and finally, I got the like she. She's coming to my place. She's like, pick a movie that's like, but she said like, pick something that's hot. I was like, what are you, okay. I mean, I'm all for that. But like, what is something that's hot? So I went to IMDb and tried to look for something that isn't like super cliche. Like, you know what I mean? Something that isn't classic, like something that we'd both seen, and stumbled upon that movie and I got it. And, yeah, it's amazing that the day still went well after that choice. What a freaking movie that was. Casey Affleck is insufferable, too. But I guess, I mean, Jessica Alba's sex scenes, so, you know, can't be all that bad, I guess. But what are we supposed to talk about?
The Fate of the Furious, obviously.
Wait, One Last Ride. How many rides has there been since the One Last Ride?
Just one. Like, what? There's only been one.
No. This is the second. Since the One Last Ride, this is the second one, at least.
I think what you're implying is that this ride ends. This ride doesn't end.
There are times where I just hate knowing you.
If you like that theory, let me tell you about my Game of Thrones theory.
Okay, we're ending this podcast immediately.
It ends with OKC getting Andrew Wiggins for Andre Robertson. That's how Game of Thrones ends.
If anybody listening to this and thought that that doesn't make any sense, you're absolutely right. Alternatively,
I'm on a roll today.
You can shut up. You can read Jeremy's column about that to try to make sense of this, except it still wouldn't make any sense. So there's that.
Yeah, go to thunderousintentions.com to read all my OKC Thunder and Game of Thrones fan fiction. I've written a lot about Game of Thrones on a Thunder site. I did a three-part trilogy.
Thing you did, yeah, the first thing was actually funny. I guess compared to whatever you wrote recently, anything is funny. But the first thing was kind of funny. This is just – I actually refused to read it based on principle. I even told you that.
Yeah, you always pre-read my columns anyway because I just text them to you.
Right. Well, since you texted me this column, I knew that I should stay the fuck away from it. Good choice, I must say.
It was the biggest story of on the weekend, on the night.
Okay, let's talk about the other story on the night.
What's that?
UFC 206.
Oh.
I was trying to get us back on track.
Well, my story was on a Friday. This is on a Saturday. So they were on separate nights. We can talk about...
I am really, really hating myself right now. Are you going to talk about this card or not? This is only our second podcast on our new home. And I don't think this is the best of first impressions.
UFC 206, headlined by Max Holloway versus Anthony Pettis for half an interim title. So we did.
Second thought, let's not. If you're going to make that joke again, let's not talk about anything.
This is the first time I've made it on air, though. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. You know what? You're forgiven. My bad.
Thank you.
Continue. Explain why is it half an interim featherweight title.
So if you listened to the podcast last week and are listening to this podcast, God bless you. But it's for an interim title because Conor's still the champion and Jose Aldo is an interim champion. And so this is your second interim title. And we recorded on, what did we record? Thursday night. And we made the interim joke a bunch of times. Lo and behold, it got worse as on Friday for the weigh-ins, Max Holloway made weight. Anthony Pettis did not make weight. So they had two choices, either scrap the fight altogether or it would just be a title fight. And if Max Holloway won, he would get the title. And if Anthony Pettis won, he would not get the title. So only half of it was on the line because only one man could win it. What a main event promotion. And by the way, all the commercials I saw for this event, it still had Cormier and Johnson. So I wonder how many people got pissed that they ordered this card and didn't get Cormier and Johnson. Probably not many,
because
I don't
think... About three, because yeah. Nobody's ordering this. Like,
that's what this is.
How many?
I don't think many people ordered it anyway, but still. Cable companies were advertising Johnson and Cormier the entire week of the card.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with a little misleading public. Actually, there's a lot.
Card subject to change.
That's right. You know what? It doesn't matter, because according to one Mike Goldberg, you know, Joe, a lot of people called this fight the unofficial main event of the evening. You know which fight he was talking about?
Yeah, that was the Cub Swanson and Duho Choi fight.
Who the fuck called that the unofficial main event of the evening? Seriously, who heading into that event was like, you know what? You know what? I know Pettis is fighting Holloway. I know Cerrone's fighting Matt Brown. But you know what's a real main event of the evening? Choi versus Cub Swanson.
It should have been the main event. It was a fucking great fight.
It was an amazing fight. I was blown away by how good it was. I would say it's fight of the year, but I've missed way too many fights to be able to make that assessment. The other great fight I saw was Lawler and Condit. So that's like off the top of my head, that's the only one that gives it any competition. But I haven't seen that fight in a while.
Lawler and Condit was early this year. This year's felt so long, but yeah, that fight was great. I feel like top three are probably like it's hard to go against Swanson and Choi because it's so fresh. Condit and Lawler is definitely up there. Diaz McGregor too was probably up there as well.
Yeah, that was a great fight. CM Punk and what's his face?
Mickey Gall. We're gonna talk about him
Mickey
later.
Gall. Yeah, that was a tremendous fight. I know it was only like 3-4 minutes long, but boy, if we didn't get our money's worth for those 3 or 4 minutes.
Max Holloway.
I mean, it was longer than that if you took out CM Punk's walk, which apparently holds a lot of weight.
Max Holloway beat Anthony Pettis.
Speaking of somebody that holds a lot of weight, huh?
Pettis broke his hand, I believe, in the second round. That's fine. He doesn't throw punches very well anyway. I thought Pettis was
doing... By the way, even though I said that with a measure of confidence, don't fall for it. I'm not sure if it's first or second, but yeah.
I thought Pettis was doing all right to start the fight because he was throwing nothing but kicks, and Holloway seemed to have trouble with him. And then once Holloway started to box a little, Pettis went into box, and that was his downfall because he's not a good boxer. Holloway finished him with a combination. I think it started with a body kick.
Body, right. Yeah.
And it kind of looked like Pettis wanted out of that fight, honestly. That was just the impression I got from him. And Holloway won, and then he's looking for Jose Aldo.
All right, I obviously am way too biased to appreciate Holloway's humor when it comes to Jose Aldo. Let's talk about the fight first. I do want to talk about Aldo versus Holloway, potentially. But let's talk about a fight. I'm with you. I actually scored the first round for Pettis. I thought he landed.
Yeah, I thought he looked good in the first round.
But after that, yeah, you're exactly right. Holloway figured that he should just box. I thought his counter right hook and counter straight left or even left hook were all on point. That's one thing about him. He counters with combinations. He doesn't counter with single strikes. And his combinations in general are pretty diverse. He goes to the body a lot, changes, goes to the head as well. His lead right hook, I was extremely impressed with that. That's another thing that I'll fully admit. I honestly did not know that Holloway's boxing was that clean. It was a very clean performance, actually. When you look at the way he was throwing, his footwork is really good. He's Rogan pointed out pretty early, and I can't believe I'm giving Rogan credit, that Holloway is never stationary. He's always a moving target. His footwork's pretty good. He finds angles really well. His combinations in general are really good. He's a much better boxer than Anthony Pettis. And ultimately, that ended up making the difference. I actually thought in the clinch, he did very, very well.
Those trips that he threw that got Pettis down, like, those were beautiful.
That's another thing about him. That's the thing. He is, even though it doesn't look just visually like he's that versatile, he really, really is. He changes things up a lot, gives you a lot of different looks. He's got underrated fake level changes. Well, they're actually level changes, but meaning like he doesn't necessarily shoot or anything off of that, but like maybe goes to the body, then goes back up. He gives you different looks, keeps you on your toes, figuratively speaking, because Anthony Pettis never gets on his toes for some reason. He's pretty flat-footed, and that was part of his problems in this fight. I mean, in his defense, yeah, breaking your hand, That must suck. Like, I know we take it for granted, like, oh, it's just part of the game or whatever. I mean, yeah, it is part of the game, but you're still breaking your hand in a sport that requires you to use it to punch people. Like, that can't be fun at all. So, any chance he had of winning that fight pretty much ended there. But at the same time, with his weight issues and this being a five-rounder, I really don't see how Pettis could have won any of the later rounds. Like, even if he doesn't get finished, I truly fail to see how Pettis wins this fight. But props to Holloway for doing what he did. Like, I was talking about the clinch. Another thing about him that I really like, which adds to his unpredictability, like, every time they separated from the clinch, he landed something. It could be a lead elbow, it could be a right hand, whatever it was. I thought Pettis kind of maybe struggled with Holloway being a southpaw. But for all of the good stuff that Holloway displayed,
do you know what Holloway did really well?
What's that?
You already know what I'm going to say, partner.
Slipped and ripped.
Slipped and ripped.
That's right. Dude, when is Mike Goldberg going to retire that term?
Never. He's still using "so you want to be an ultimate fighter" 20 years later.
Yeah, that is a good point.
People on Twitter are disappointed that Rogan and Goldberg are going to get are happy that Rogan and Goldberg are going to get fired, and I don't know why. Like,
are they going to get fired?
That's the big rumor. Because you know the company that bought the UFC are just basically cutting costs everywhere, and Mike Goldberg and Joe Rogan are fucking expensive. I'm sure.
You know what? Let's save that for after the fight, because that is, you know, because like we talk about commentary on this podcast so much that I do feel we need to address this. But let me just finish with one quick point about Pettis. One thing that always struck me with Pettis, and it was actually eye-opening that he didn't lose this fight the way he normally does, which is we talked about it before the fight. It was about how people just pressure him and he crumbles. That's not how Holloway picked him apart. But one thing about Pettis's offense, for all the flashiness, for all the dynamic nature of his striking, for all the creativity, his offense is really, how to say this, unstructured, in the sense that it feels sometimes like he's just throwing strikes for the sake of throwing strikes. Like, they are not part of a greater, bigger, wider picture game plan. Contrast that, and we'll get to that in a minute, with Donald Cerrone and the way he uses his kicks. There's a pretty stark contrast right there. Because Cerrone has a very obvious game plan with the way he's using his kicks, how he throws to the body to open up the head kicks. Pettis is just... Okay, I guess the push kicks are fine as distance gaugers, as kind of like creating space. But beyond that, he doesn't throw a ton of leg kicks. They're not like an extensive part of his game plan. His body kicks are fantastic, except he didn't use them as often as he should have in that fight.
I didn't and think beyond he that, threw any worthwhile body kick. Like any, yeah. Remember when he stopped Cerrone with a body kick? Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And, like, and the Henderson fight as well. Like, he used to throw really hard body kicks, and I don't feel like he threw any body kick with.
Yeah, we're talking
any
about
type
like
of
a roundhouse to the body, right. Not the sort of front kicks. Yeah, the impactful body kicks. He just doesn't do that for some reason. His offense just looked random occasionally, and. Actually, I wouldn't even say occasionally. It just looked random, period. That is one thing. It is like, and it's fine to have creativity as the basis of your all. Like, look, it led him to a title win. So we can't dispute that. But it's also important to evolve. And when your whole offense, especially striking wise, is based on flash, you really have to have at worst very solid proper boxing fundamentals in terms of footwork, in terms of defense, and in terms of countering, or actually just putting punches together when you need to, or having a jab. And Pettis has none of that. Like, if I were to tell you right now, who's a fighter, in your opinion, that does this well, who's known for, like, really creative strikes that doesn't – he's super unpredictable, doesn't necessarily have – let's say, a structured approach to fighting, but he does what he does and it works great. Who would you say does that very well or used to?
I would say John Jones used to.
Striking-wise, just talking about striking.
Yeah, John Jones used to be.
John Jones is a good example. I think Anderson is like an obvious choice as well.
Yeah, I figured you were going for Anderson, but I feel
like Anderson...
curveball.
Jones is – well, don't. Next time, go where I'm heading for the sake of chemistry. I think Anderson Silva can get away with that because, first of all, he's not nearly as hittable as Pettis. You can't outbox him. Like, he can do that because you cannot outstrike him. He's still going to be able to slip your punches and counter properly. And when he needs to, he's got a phenomenal jab. He just doesn't use it that often because he does whatever else it is that he does. I'm not asking for Pettis to be Anderson Silva or anything, but you need to have the minimum amount of proper boxing, which I really think Pettis lacks completely. And it's costing him at this point in his career.
I don't think he has any boxing. Like, when has Pettis ever shown
Yeah, even when he
good
was good,
hands.
He didn't. You're
yeah.
right.
And that's who Duke Rufus is his boxing trainer, same guy that trains CM Punk. What if CM Punk went there and everybody else just got worse instead of him getting better?
Because they're training with him? Like, he's lowering the overall level of the gym?
Yeah.
I buy it. Yeah, why not?
Anthony Pettis has kind of sucked since CM Punk. CM Punk started there right before the Pettis-Dos Anjos fight, and Pettis has sucked
right,
ever
Pettis
since
was the
then.
Champ when Punk went there.
Punk was in his corner for that fight. Which made absolutely no sense.
I guess he was allowed four cornermen for that fight, unlike this one when he was allowed three.
Which is either a Toronto thing or a half an interim title
half
thing.
Half a title fight thing, one or the other.
So yeah, Max Holloway, I thought he looked really good. Do you want to talk about the commentary or do you want to quickly
talk about
Aldo?
Like, I appreciate, in all seriousness, good on Holloway for calling out Aldo. At least he's showing personality. It was a funny joke. But there's been a lot of dumb narratives with regards to Aldo lately. Now, this is obviously not nearly as dumb as the whole he never won a UFC title thing. But there has been, and I've seen this quite a bit, about, like, oh, yeah, only a matter of time before Aldo pulls out of the fight or whatever. Listen, if you're saying that because he gets injured a lot, that's fair. He does get injured a lot.
They're reportedly fighting at UFC 208, which I don't think is legit.
Wait, what? Was that not UFC 206?
Yeah, that's why, again, I don't
think it's legit. So they're fighting in two numbered cards?
Yeah. And UFC 207, by the way, is the end of December. I mean, 208 is Super Bowl weekend, February 11th, but that's still 2 months.
Yeah.
I don't think Max Holloway is fighting in 2 months.
Yeah, I'm not.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
I'm not buying that. Regardless, there seems to be sort of a running narrative right now about how Aldo wants to dodge this fight. And I've honestly read 4 different tweets using the word dodge, and I tried my best not to respond. Can we be serious? Aldo would handily outclass Max Holloway. Handily.
Well, we're going to find out in 2 months.
I don't think it's going to be a close fight at all. That is the thing with MMA. People, it's weird how these things work. MMA fans, when it comes to certain things, they either have the longest memories ever, meaning if you've acquired a reputation for being boring, it sticks with you forever, no matter what you end up doing afterwards, or they have the shortest memories ever, where Jose Aldo effortlessly was pretty much beating the entire division. Then he loses to Conor. Then he beat a fighter who's probably, even at this point, better than Max Holloway in Edgar, at least as equal. And did it? I mean, Aldo looked actually pretty great in that fight as well. I'll be the first to admit, I think Aldo has lost a hint of speed, for sure. But he's still way too good for all of these guys. Anybody not named Conor, and since Conor is no longer the champion, or he still is the champion if you ask Conor, and if you ask us, he still is the champion, hence the whole interim joke. Since that guy is no longer part of the division officially, yeah, nobody's good enough in that division for Aldo. Max Holloway says Aldo has a knack of pulling out of fights. I mean, I tweeted this. Yeah, he also has a knack of beating fighters like Max Holloway with ease, which he will do if these guys face. I don't think it's going to be a close call. This boxing that Max Holloway displayed against Andy Pettis, which was great, this is supposed to be his approach against Aldo, especially since Max Holloway is not necessarily a dynamite puncher in terms of power. He's supposed to outbox Aldo for 5 rounds. That's what we're going with.
He might.
Oh, I thought you were thinking he might do something. Oh, there was a continuation to the he might. No. Or just saying he might outbox him for 5 rounds. Yeah, okay. I'm just going to sell that troll job.
I don't think he will. I think you're selling Max Holloway a little bit short in a fight with Aldo, because I know you have a crush on Jose Aldo.
That is not correct. You have a crush on Jose Aldo.
Okay. I'm a puppet as well.
Not a puppet. You're the puppet. You're the puppet.
I think it's a good fight. Yeah, I think Aldo beats him. We'll break that fight down.
No, it is a good fight. In 2 years, when it happens. I'm not saying it shouldn't. Yeah, 2 years. I'm not saying it shouldn't happen by any means. I'm just saying let's pump the brakes a little bit.
That's fair.
And seriously, show all of the proper respect. We're talking about a top four, top five at worst, all-time GOAT. We don't make that joke on air enough. We should. One of the five greatest fighters of all time, who's still pretty much not in his prime, but pretty much one of the best fighters in the world. And Max Holloway isn't quite there yet. And I don't think outstriking Jose Aldo for five rounds is the way to do it. I really, really, really don't see it. Like, Aldo, if he bothers to just throw kicks, I also think he can just win the fight like that. He hasn't implemented, like, a kick-heavy approach in a long time. But if he just goes to town with leg kicks, I really think he can just win the fight doing that. Anyway, there will be a time to talk about that, as you said, in 2 years.
The commentary.
Now let's address the rumors. That's right.
Do you want to do it after this or after the Swanson Choi fight?
Actually, yeah, after the Swanson and Choi, because I do have a few gems that Mike Goldberg uttered in that fight. So maybe it'll be topical then.
Donald Cerrone beat Matt Brown with a vicious body kick.
Vicious body kick to the head.
Yeah. It's a good fight. Matt Brown dropped Cerrone in the first round. I think I gave the first round to Brown. And then Cerrone kind of settled in a little bit more after that. It looked like Brown gassed and Cerrone was attacking the body. He hit him with two or three clean head kicks in the first and second round. And fuck, Matt Brown can take a shot. It was finally either the third or fourth one that knocked him out cold. And I didn't think Cerrone looked great, but he fought Matt Brown, so he still won. And, you know, it's Donald Cerrone. He always starts...
Yeah, that he never looks super great. Like, he's always going to get hit. You know what I mean? Like, that is his thing. My biggest issue with Cerrone in this fight actually was how sloppy he was in getting caught with that triangle. Not getting
hit on the feet. Was actually worried. Like, I didn't think Matt Brown was going to submit him, but if Matt Brown knew what he was doing, he had a chance because it was right there for the taking.
And it wasn't like smartly set up or even subtle. Like Cerrone, like Matt Brown, I think he either tripped on a high kick or something, and he just like Cerrone was diving right into his guard, and Matt Brown just casually wrapped his legs around Cerrone's shoulders. And I didn't think it looked that close, like super, super close at any point. But
I thought it was still tight. It was deep.
Sure. Even Goldberg didn't say tight and deep, so you know it wasn't quite tight and deep, but it was a legitimate submission attempt, and a good one at that. Not one of those submission attempts where just like fighters aimlessly flail their legs upwards and pretend that they're going for something. That's not actually a submission attempt. This, on the other hand, was, and I don't think Cerrone. He might not be a jiu-jitsu wizard, but he knows what he's doing on the ground enough to where, you shouldn't be getting caught with that, not by Matt Brown at least. But beyond that, he got hit because that's how he rolls. But look, as obnoxious as Donald Cerrone is as a person, he's pretty great to watch inside the cage. And that's actually, he's really smart on the feet in terms of offense. And I know smart is not necessarily a word you usually associate with Cerrone's fighting style, but he is smart at maximizing the effectiveness of his kicks, because his boxing, like his offensive boxing is fine. He's super hittable and his footwork is whatever, but offensively, like his boxing is fine, but he doesn't necessarily pack a lot of power in his punches. He can still hurt you, but he's good at using his kicks either in combinations. Like a lot of times he would go like head kick followed by a right hand, or a body kick followed by a right hand, or right hand followed by a body kick. Like he likes to set up his high kicks with jabs as well. And he goes to the body a lot as well to sort of set up the high kicks. And they're really deceptive. Like it's hard to just fully be prepared for his high kicks, because he can throw them as like sort of like a lead snap kick, like the George St. Pierre thing, and he can just throw them like the crow cop typical high kick. And he's great at both, and he's super quick at both as well. And I don't think it's a coincidence that kicking he's been as effective and as successful with kicking throughout his career. I really like his reaction to the finish. I just like stood there for a second, admired his own work, and then just walked away. It was a spectacular finish. So it's a really good fight. So props to Donald Cerrone for being able to maximize his offensive arsenal.
I actually thought he was searching too much for the head kick in this fight.
But it was landing
a
lot.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It was landing, and so I couldn't blame him too much for it. Like, I wanted him to... He said in the pre-fight interview, like, you know, Matt Brown gasses, and he doesn't deal well with body shots. And I didn't think he went to the body nearly enough for knowing that a guy doesn't do well with body shots. I would have liked to see him throwing that kick to the body more. But, yeah, the head kick was landing clean and flush almost every single time, so it was tough to fault him for still going at it. And Cerrone wants to fight at UFC 208, and he probably will.
What's a good fight for Cerrone next?
The Gas. I don't think the Gas can make welterweight. They were supposed to fight at UFC 200, but Gas couldn't make weight.
Okay, so give me a good welterweight fight. Although I would have been all for a fight with the Gas, especially in light of what the Gas did. He's earned my fandom.
He's an hero.
At least for a while. What's that?
I said he's an hero.
Oh, okay.
If Robbie Lawler can go, like...
Oh, yeah.
I don't see how you don't book that fight.
Although, if Lawler is in form, I think it could end pretty badly for Donald Cerrone, because
I think Lawler hates him, man. I think it could end badly,
it could end badly for either of them, actually. Yeah, come to think of it. But I would probably think that Lawler lands a haymaker before Cerrone lands a high kick.
Yeah,
Cerrone
I don't
is
know.
Way too hittable.
I agree. I mean, Cerrone obviously has a chin on him. It would just be, can Cerrone keep a distance long enough to where, kind of fight the Carlos Condit fight almost, except Cerrone has more power in his strikes than Condit, and just keep the distance a little bit and avoid all those haymakers. But that's the thing.
That's not Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, and like, I mean, Carlos Condit didn't do it either. But Condit, like Cerrone, just has a hell of a chin.
That's the thing. Like, Cerrone is smart in terms of maximizing his offensive arsenal, but he's not smart in terms of game planning. And I don't care what kind of chin you have, and Cerrone's chin is pretty fantastic. I don't think there is such a thing as a good chin when it comes to being on the receiving end of a Robbie Lawler left hook, honestly.
That's fair. I like that fight, though. I mean,
I love that fight. Props.
It would be if Cerrone wants to fight at lightweight. I don't know who he fights at lightweight.
Does he want to fight at lightweight, though? Why would he want to do that?
Because it's Donald Cerrone. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. You know, fight wherever.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Give him Habib. That would be bad, though.
Yeah, that would be bad for Cerrone. Maybe Edson Barboza at lightweight. They fought, though, didn't they? Yeah, and Cerrone beat him. But that was a few years ago.
Basically any striker in any division, and that's a good fight.
Yeah, they fought in 2014, so it'd be almost 3 years for the rematch.
A quick aside, I was actually thinking today for some reason of my top five fights of all time, and I haven't gotten there, but one that's definitely on the list is Cerrone's first fight with Ben Henderson. That's kind of irrelevant, but I just needed to point that out. Donald Cerrone's had great, great fights, basically, is what I'm trying to say. And his first fight with Ben Henderson is one of the most underrated fights of all time because people did praise it a ton at the time, but nobody mentions that anymore. Anybody listening to this, if you have 25 minutes to kill, seriously, do yourself a favor and look that up from the WEC days.
Yeah,
they fought three times, right?
Yeah, they fought three times.
Their first fight was a really, really terrific one.
The third fight was kind of what started Ben Henderson's downfall. Lost before that, but that was kind of a bullshit decision that he lost. And then the second fight, I don't have. Oh yeah, Ben Henderson. That was quick.
He submitted him.
Yeah,
with a DAT.
It was really quick. Yeah. That was a very disappointing fight.
It was so disappointing because we were all super excited for the rematch, and he just tapped him out quickly.
Yeah.
Although, a quick point about the third fight, I don't think Ben Henderson is in any position to complain about bullshit.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
But that doesn't make it okay. Like, just because a guy got screwed, judges screwed his opponents in the past doesn't mean, you know, like, oh, he's got what's coming for him.
Right, right.
But I'm just saying. Anyway. Let's talk about the unofficial main event of the evening.
Cub Swanson and Duho Choi. A lot of people high on Duho Choi prior to this fight, and he looked good. I mean, he got hit way too much, but...
I don't know, but he looked good. It was a fantastic fight.
He became a bigger star after this fight.
I agree. I agree.
That was kind of the point I was going for.
Remember his name.
Yeah.
People will remember his name. This was almost it. Actually, when I think of all, the mindless brawls, and I don't mean that necessarily in a negative way when I say mindless brawls. I'm just talking about, two guys just going in there and throwing. Nam Phan and Leonard Garcia, or who did he also have a great fight with? Korean Zombie and Leonard Garcia?
Yeah,
and
Korean Zombie.
Which was, insane. I actually like this fight because it had a measure of science to the madness. By comparison. And, I mean, I'm talking strictly from memory. I haven't seen the zombie Leonard Garcia fight since it originally happened. I'm guessing that was 2010. So that's a long-ass time ago. But I do like about this fight that there was a hint of attempts at technical boxing, at least from Choi's end.
From Choi. Swanson doesn't do anything very technical.
Swanson doesn't do technical boxing. But from Choi's end, or as Joe Rogan would call him, the kid, he just kept referring him as the kid. That kid has a chin on him, the kid, okay. I guess that's a UFC thing. If you can't remember a guy's name, you just, that jiu-jitsu kid, that whatever. Okay, help me out here. In this fight, Mike Goldberg said, and I quote, and he's doing it against arguably the best boxer in the featherweight division, Joe. Now, the statement is stupid regardless of who he was referring to. But who was he referring to?
I think he was referring to Swanson.
To Cub Swanson, yeah. Exactly. That's what I think so as well, because Rogan goes he is a very good boxer. So Rogan kind of pumped the brake without calling him an idiot. And he trains with world-class boxers, so I'm guessing he wasn't talking about Choi. Cub Swanson, arguably the best boxer in the featherweight division. Dude, Cub Swanson was not the best boxer in the cage. Don't get me wrong, he won the fight, and he landed the harder shots, and it was a phenomenal fight. But, no, he's not arguably the best boxer in anything. There's no argument there.
Cub Swanson is a very wild striker, and God bless him for it. I mean, he was throwing cartwheel kicks and all this other nonsense, but it works for him. And he does get hit a lot, but he dishes it right back out. And you can't really do this fight justice, so I'm not even going to try.
You should definitely watch it, though. Yeah. Anybody that missed it, well, truly, honestly, because I saw you texted me and you said the fight, because I had missed it at the time, on Saturday, and you said the fight was great, do yourself a favor, watch it. And I read a lot of praise about it, but honestly, Alvin, I kind of like shrugged my shoulders, like, eh, whatever. But when I watched it, I was honestly blown away. Like, I did not expect it to be this good.
It was a close
fight.
That
second round was amazing.
Yeah, the second round where both men got wobbled.
My only piece of analysis, I'll say real quick, is when Choi had him hurt, and it's a gripe I have with many fighters when they go just strictly into headhunting mode, especially when fighters are like turtling against the cage and like just covering up, not turtling. When they're covering up against the cage, you're hitting a lot of arm, dude. Just go to the body. You know what I mean? Like, that guy is all covered up against the cage. Just go to the body to open up the head. I mean, it's like...
And that's something that... and they're the same age, which is kind of weird. It shows you that Max Holloway is a better boxer than Choi.
Yeah.
Even though Choi outboxed the arguably the best boxer in the division. That's something Holloway did when he had Pettis hurt.
Yeah.
Is when Pettis was covering up against the cage, like, he was hitting a lot of arm, and so he realized, well, I'll just go to the body, and that's when Pettis kind of dropped and was done. Yeah, Choi, they're both 25, but Holloway, his fight IQ,
much more mature. He fights more maturely. That's again a testament to all. I wouldn't want to come off like in the whole Aldo versus Holloway thing as if I'm like downplaying how good of a fighter Max Holloway is, because he did look great. So I just want to make that clear.
Choi and Swanson, though, outstanding fight. Again, if you have 15 to 20 minutes, even if you don't make time, because it's probably going to win fight of the year. I feel like any great fight that happens at the end of the year gets more recognition just because it's fresher in the minds of people. And we talked about it earlier, but you brought up Condit and Lawler, and I really thought that was 2 years ago. Choi and Swanson.
Well, a lot of shit happened in 2016, both in the MMA world and outside of it, so I can't fault you for thinking.
That's very true.
Unfortunately, none of it is good.
Yeah.
What a terrible year this has been.
Choi Swanson, it was great. It was a close fight, and if you took the entertainment and the ferocity out of the fight, it was a back-and-forth fight. That was my favorite quote of the night.
Yeah, you texted me that quote, and I was like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. But I forgot that it took place – I mean, I didn't forget. Since I missed the fight, I didn't know that it happened in this fight. I guess you might have told me, but I just forgot. So as I was watching this fight, Goldberg says it. And my favorite part is, as he was saying it, Rogan interrupts him to say something, but Goldberg is insistent. So he continues.
Listen,
he
said, nothing,
if you take out the entertainment and the...
Nothing prevents Mike Goldberg when he has a point to make, all right? The most famous being KOTOR dropping Sylvia, and Mike Goldberg had the fucking plug shooter.
That is so true. It's like when Goldberg wants to call, because two things that Goldberg loves to call is an uppercut and especially a Superman punch. So sometimes like a fighter would throw a Superman punch and miss by a mile, but Rogan would be like going on a big ass point throughout. So when Goldberg gets done with his rant, point, analysis, whatever, 15 seconds later, Goldberg is still insistent on going like, missing with a super punch a while ago was George St. Pierre, Joe. In exactly that sentence structure, because he's Mike Goldberg. He can't say George St. Pierre missed with a Superman punch. That would make way too much sense. So, yeah, Mike Goldberg, if nothing else, he's tenacious. He's determined.
Mike Goldberg embraces the grind.
He does embrace the grind. My favorite part of this fight is, you know what, because when I watched it, it might have been on a... let's say, an illegal internet video, potentially illegal internet video. Only this fight. And it was after the event. I didn't live stream the event, so don't worry. But you know how sometimes they do certain things in these videos to avoid, like, copyright? So they would, like, either tweak – they might reverse the angle or, right. like, tweak the audio a bit. So they had tweaked the audio. I don't know what they did. And I swear, dude, I'll send you the link. It sounded like Goldberg and Rogan were on helium. Like, you could still tell that it's them because of the tone and like, the phrasing. But Goldberg was sounding like that throughout the fight. And it was the best Mike Goldberg ever. Because what's better than Mike Goldberg? Mike Goldberg on helium. So imagine Goldberg saying, if you take out the entertainment and ferocity, only sounding like Chandler from that one episode of Friends. It was spectacular. It really, I think that's why I love this fight so much, actually. It raised the entertainment a lot. Actually, from now on, Goldberg and Rogan should be on helium throughout the event. That would make the commentary infinitely better. If they are fired, I can't believe I'll say this, because anybody who's familiar with our podcasts throughout the years, you know how irate I get at MMA commentary. And I like not just MMA, especially Goldberg and Rogan. I like that at first you never cared that much, but I used to rant about them so much that I made you hate them. I remember that, because there was this one time you were like, I hate you, dude. Now you're just – you made me get pissed at UFC commentary. Every time they say something, I was like, fuck off, Mike Goldberg. You, before that, you usually were like – you just shrug it off and laugh it off. However, I will say this. As I've come to hate watch a lot of MMA and embrace the – it's not the grind. I'm trying to look for a word that rhymes. But embrace the more wacky aspects of MMA and accept the terrible with the good. I've started to enjoy how laughably bad Goldberg and Rogan are. And I honestly would want them to stay around.
They provide so much – unintentional comedy.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
That it wouldn't be the same without them. Honestly, I actually think Goldberg, or not Goldberg, he's still as bad as he always been. I think Rogan has been better basically ever since they sold the company. Like, ever since the CM Punk card. Like, I think
Hold on. No. I disagree there. He didn't make the walk. He had no business criticizing CM Punk.
I think he's been better since the company sold.
I agree, actually. Since he's become less of a shill, basically.
Yeah, and he's just kind of saying whatever he wants to say, because he clearly doesn't care at this point. Like, he's collecting his paycheck. It seems like he knows his time is coming to an end, and it's whatever.
His time is now. Goldberg dropped the "his time is now" on this card. Did you notice that?
I didn't catch it.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I believe you.
It was about Max Holloway.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he knows his time is now. Rogan thinks his time is now, and that's why they're fighting.
Yeah.
And Rogan became my hero at that point.
Rogan, it kind of makes you appreciate Rogan more throughout the years. Like, I'm sure it
for
started
putting up with that moron.
Yeah, I'm sure it started. Like, Rogan's never been good either. We've always had our gripes with both of them.
Yeah, Rogan can be, and he has had nights where he's just like putridly bad. Where I would rather Goldberg, because Goldberg would just say stupid things. But Rogan would hurt the product in terms of terrible analysis, or like swaying the audience into believing Frankie Edgar was beating Jose Aldo in their first fight, which is like nonsense. But yeah.
But you know, it always reminds me of the Travis Luter, the Michael Jordan of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And Rogan is just like, no, that's not right. And Goldberg says these dumb things at least once a card. And sometimes Rogan just flat out ignores it. And other times he's like, I need to call you out that you're being stupid and see if you can talk your way out of it. And it's always great because he can never talk his way out of it because he just says these dumb things. And I don't know if he thinks they're smart or he just says them because he's a robot, Mike Goldberg ebooks, and he just doesn't.
Great Twitter account.
Yeah, and he just doesn't know any better, honestly.
I think he doesn't know any better. I don't think he thinks he's smart or anything. I really think he's a robot. That Michael Jordan of Jiu-Jitsu Exchange is so good because it highlights what you're saying to a T. Because not only does Goldberg go Michael Jordan-esque in his jiu-jitsu is Travis Luter, Joe. That was exactly what he said. He didn't even say Travis Luter is Michael Jordan-esque. He said Michael Jordan-esque in his jiu-jitsu is Travis Luter, Joe. And Rogan goes, no, he's not. So remember what was Goldberg's attempt to get out of it? He goes, Larry Bird? He's like, no. It's like Kobe Bryant? And Rogan goes, those are the only basketball players I know, dude. Like, just talk. Basically, Goldberg's attempt at
you know Goldberg would have just kept going on and naming.
Absolutely. If he said no, I would have liked to see where Goldberg would have ended up. Like, I would guess, like, B.J. Armstrong. I mean, he wouldn't know who B.J. Armstrong is, though. Like, what's the basement on Goldberg's basketball knowledge? Who do you think he would have ended up naming before, like, Rogan just roundhouse kicked him in the face?
Vince Carter.
That's a good one. Vince Carter. Because, you know, Travis Luter is half man, half amazing.
Yeah, and you could tell Rogan, he knew it was dumb, and he called him out, and then he even knew that Goldberg would have kept going, and so he was like, that's all I know.
Yeah.
So don't even say any more names.
Because, he said, that's all I know after he said Kobe Bryant. Like, dude, you know who Kobe Bryant is, but he just clearly had enough. Because that could have kept going on until pretty much the moment Silva tapped him out. And Rogan would have been, and that is why he is not any of those basketball players you just named. Michael Jordan-esque in his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is Travis Luter, Joe. One of the greatest quotes in MMA history. Or as Tito Ortiz would say.
On the night.
Exactly.
We're going to play the Goldberg video at the end of this podcast.
Dude, if Goldberg and Tito Ortiz...
My God. If Bellator signs Mike Goldberg, I mean, it's tough for them to get any more amazing, but...
But, yeah. Dude, I'm not even kidding. I would pay for a pay-per-view card just because it has Goldberg and Ortiz on commentary.
It would be... I don't have the words to describe it, and neither will they.
They'll just have gas coming out of their ass, and it's not their butts.
What was it? Was it last night? I don't know if you were drunk, but you were drinking juice.
Night we were watching the Thunder game.
Yeah, we were watching the Thunder game, and you're like, hey... And I looked up at my screen, and you had juice. It had juice in it, so you did not squash it. You did not treat it.
The thing is, I had finished drinking it, but you know, sometimes there's always stuff like at the bottom. So I was way too worried.
You should have done it anyway. Get the balls.
Yeah, I just couldn't muster up the courage to actually just squash it the way Ortiz did. I should have, but I was worried to spill something all over my couch or my clothes or whatever. I should have. And that is why I'm not the one fighting Chael Sonnen. Tito Ortiz is. I haven't made the walk, so I couldn't smash the juice carton. I'm sorry.
Kevin
Gastelum. I know my place.
Kevin Gastelum beat Tim Kennedy. Thank God.
Bless you, Kevin Gastelum. Bless you. The gas. He's got gas coming out of his ass. And it's not his butt. Bless you, good sir. He just did... PTSD sufferers around the world, or as Tim Kennedy would call them,
pussies.
Exactly. A huge favor.
I didn't think either guy looked that great, especially Kennedy. Like, Tim Kennedy beat the middleweight champion. That's still baffling to me because Tim Kennedy is not a good fighter. And I don't think Gastelum's a good fighter either. He's clearly a better striker. And Kennedy couldn't get him to the ground, so he was almost forced to stand with him. And Gastelum outstruck him, and he finished him in the middle of the third round. It was a fight. I mean, it was good because Tim Kennedy lost, and what people say,
that's all that matters.
Yeah, you know what people say on Twitter, or if they beat up women or whatever, and then they go on to lose a fight, it doesn't change the course of their actions, or it's not punishment for those actions. I never feel like they should be. I guess in this case, it is like saying PTSD sufferers are pussies isn't the same as domestic abuse, but. Yeah, Tim Kennedy's still a shitty person, whether he gets beat up.
Oh, dude,
or not.
Tim Kennedy has killed women and children, though, and he bragged about it, so he's done way worse than domestic abuse.
Well, there
you
go.
Can say casualties of war or bullshit like that, but he still went on and bragged about it. So,
well, there you go. Losing,
getting
beat up in a fight still isn't punishment for those things.
I agree.
So that was my overall point.
Yeah, you were kind of losing me, but I finally get your point. I agree in full, but it's if it's the only consolation we can get right now, I'll take it.
That's fair. Emil Meek beat Jordan Mean. I didn't pay much attention to this fight. I think Mean had him hurt early, and then Meek just out-wrestled him. Meek looked like a welterweight Josh Barnett in terms of look. He had the mohawk and the Viking beard. He's a scary-looking man. The fight was whatever. It was fine. It was a good opener. Good crowd warmer.
Did I wonder if Goldberg had any Meek Mean workplace?
Oh, I'm sure he did. I just was not paying enough attention to catch it.
Okay.
The prelim cards, I saw two of them. Misha Kirinok, blah. That guy beat Nikita Krylov. That kid... beat Nikita
the
Krylov.
Kid, exactly.
Yeah. Kind of surprising because people were very high on Krylov, including myself, but Misha rocked him and then submitted him with a guillotine. And then Lando Venata knocked out John McDessie with a spinning wheel kick. So John McDessie had his highlights. And
that Tom McDessie, known for his highlight reel spinning back fist at UFC 128,
nine,
I want to say.
129.
Nine. But I'm Mike Goldberg, so I'm going to mess it up. 128. Got knocked out with a spinning back kick.
It's also...
Except that would be ironic, so Goldberg would not call it ironic, because he uses ironic in a way that means incidental. So,
is the irony in that both cards took place in Toronto.
See that? Yeah, bravo. That would be exactly that. That's something incidental. Like, it's just like it's a coincidental or whatever. And Goldberg would say, ironically, Joe, both fights have taken place in Toronto. Exactly. That's why we're so good together, partner.
So that was UFC 206. Really good card. I mean, all the top three fights delivered. Tim Kennedy got beat up, and there was a highlight reel knockout. It's tough to ask for more, honestly.
We saw the best boxer in the featherweight division in action as well.
Sure, true.
Arguably, the best boxer. Yeah, I don't want to get carried away here.
There is, of course, another card this weekend. The best.
Seriously.
Dude, it's the weekend, which means there's a UFC card.
Yeah, you're right. Fair point.
The best-looking UFC on Fox card, possibly of all time. I'm not sure they're going to be able to top this one.
Oh, I know your tone. You're trolling.
No, this legitimately is the best-looking card.
UFC on Fox?
Yes.
Not FX?
On Fox? Yes.
So better than... I don't know. Brandon Vera versus Shogun Hua?
Way better. Name any UFC on Fox card. It's a better looking card.
You keep saying better looking, so I'm worried that you're making some pun.
Paige Van Zandt against...
Exactly.
Wait. Against Michelle Watterson. Sage Northcutt versus Mickey Gall. And Uriah Faber.
It. I know you too well. Shut up. I knew you too well.
This is an amazing looking card. There's a lot of hotness on this card.
See, people, when you've been friends and you've been doing podcasts for like 6 years, well, 5 years, work friends indeed, for 5 years with the same person, you start to know them. Even the wacky, seemingly unpredictable stuff, you know what they're going for. He kept going, saying looking, and I did not like that. The best looking thing. I knew there was something off there. And, yeah. I actually don't know what... Oh, okay, I know what Paige Van Zandt looks like, but I don't know what Michelle Watterson looks
Michelle
like.
Michelle Watterson's nickname is the Karate Hottie.
Oh, I've heard of her. Yeah. I've heard of the nickname. No, I've definitely heard of her anyway, but I've heard of the nickname. I just wasn't aware it was her.
Yes.
Let's see what she looks like. You can, like, kill airtime by saying something, by, like, reading out the rest of the card.
I read most of it. So, again, Paige...
Like, pervert on Michelle Watterson here. Let's see. Michelle Watterson. Oh, she's Asian. Is she? Yeah, she's Asian. Okay, yeah, she's pretty good looking.
Van Zandt against Watterson. It's... You know why they're doing this fight, and it's because they are good-looking. I don't know how good Van Zandt is. Like, I
she's pretty good-looking. You mean how good in terms of skill. Never mind.
Yes. I know she's a good striker. Obviously, great footwork, because she was the runner-up in Dancing with the Stars. So, gotta have great footwork to be... the runner-up. And I don't know. I don't think her wrestling is great. Watterson, I mean, they're both kind of strikers. I'm leaning towards Watterson. I'm not sold on Paige Van Zandt. Sold on her looks, not on her fighting.
You're sold on her looks. That's yes. Mighty nice of you. I'm actually with you on... should I say this? I'm with you on most, seriously, female fighters right now in the UFC, most of them, not being as good as they advertised. And I don't want to get into a whole... Because we can do a whole podcast about that, how, you know, female MMA is still on you and whatever. It's not that they're not good. It's that many of them are not good enough to be... consistent enough. So in other words, you cannot trust. There's a lot of like unpredictability, and not necessarily in a good way. Like, for example, it makes for a good viewing for sure. And I'm not talking about their looks, but it's hard to trust a female fighter right now, given the state of pretty much any women's division, to go on four fight winning streak. Like, is there one that you feel confident? I'm sure some are already on a four fight winning streak. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're incapable. I'm just saying, like, it's hard to fully trust how good they are, because in many cases they have severe holes in their game. And I know people can go like, well, that applies to any fighter. That does apply to a lot of male fighters for sure. This is not, you know, a sexist thing. This is just the state of women's MMA right now as it continues to grow. Like, Ronda Rousey is probably, arguably, Joe, the greatest... Oh, she's not arguably. She is the most dangerous unarmed female combatant in history.
That's right.
Yet her striking is atrocious. And we're talking about the greatest female fighter of all time. Well, second greatest, it's Cyborg, but whatever. Well, let's stick with accomplishments. The most accomplished female fighter of all time. Look at how she looked against Holly Holm, who proceeded to get her ass beat by Misha Tate. So my point is, even Ronda Rousey, it's just like there are certain aspects of their game where just like completely clueless, and we're talking about the like elite of the elite. So clearly they've got ways to go in terms of polishing their game, and it's not their fault at all. Like, women's division have only been in the UFC since 2012, so clearly they're a work in process. It's a new thing. They are going to get better. Like, Joanna's just super good, don't get me wrong, but that is why it's hard to look at any prospect right now and go like, oh yeah, she's legit, she's going to be fantastic, she's got this fight in the bag. You know what I mean? All of this to say that I'm with you on Waterson winning this fight.
Yeah, Van Zandt is a she's aggressive on the feet, and I don't know if you're going to be aggressive on the feet as a woman. Like, you've got to kind of know what you're doing, especially when you're facing a superior striker like Waterson.
I guess
is.
That applies, though, not just to women. Though. That's a general rule,
like, right? Yeah, fair enough. Actually, it's works better in women's favor because most women fighters
can't counter.
Yeah, can't counter.
That's why Ronda Rousey was able to just like move forward and bull rush a few fighters, and Joe Rogan would declare her as having K1 level striking.
Right,
he did, but yeah. So no, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
But Waterson moves well on her feet, coming from with the karate background, and can counter. And so I think that's trouble for Van Zandt, who probably wants to grapple in this fight. I said that she's a striker earlier, but she's more of a grappler. She did have a flying head kick KO in her last fight, which some people thought was fixed. But yeah, I think that Waterson beats her mainly on the feet. I'm not sure.
I'm sure the fight will be great. By the way, whatever gripes I have with the skill set of a lot of these women right now, that doesn't take away from the excitement. If you take away the ferocity of the and the excitement, they're still great fights. Like, seriously, like honestly, they're almost always put on great fights without fail. So that is, I'm not disputing at all. The entertainment value.
Sage Northcutt against Mickey Gall.
Is the CM Punk Slayer.
I don't know if either of these guys are good.
Oh, neither is good, but one of them has beaten UFC fighters and another has beaten CM Punk. I'm going to go with the guy that's beaten UFC fighters before.
The guy that's beaten UFC fighters, I don't know if they're really UFC fighters.
I agree, but they're better than CM Punk. I'm not saying he's necessarily, he might lose to Mickey Gall. I wouldn't even be shocked, but I gotta go by what I know. And I'm gonna go with the guy that didn't face CM Punk, because I think the mere fact that they picked you to face CM Punk might be like, eh, you know, not a good look for you. So
I'm going to go with Mickey Gall. I'm going with the CM Punk Slayer. I think he takes down Northcutt and submits him. Sage is not good on the ground. Like, not good at all.
Sage wins with a north-south choke so that Mike Goldberg can call it. I guess Goldberg would not be commentating this event. And they can call it the Northcutt
No,
choke.
He would be. It's on Fox.
Oh, it's on Fox? Yeah. All right. So, Sage by Northcutt choke. No, I mean, yeah, Sage is terrible on the ground, honestly. It's a really weird fight to pick. But, seriously, Sage Northcutt is just a weird guy. Like, I know he's, like, super jolly and like, always happy and whatever. But he's just, like, I don't know. Something about him is just weird.
Is this for, like, talent level, the top four fights? I'm not saying any of these fighters are bad, but they're all so questionable. Like, there's
Wait,
nothing...
what was your question, though? I didn't get the question.
Like for the top four fights...
Yeah.
Is this the most questionable talent level? Or not top four, top four fighters. Top two fights. Like, the most questionable talent level. Like, there's nothing concrete about any of these fighters.
Yeah, questionable. Not necessarily. We don't know. That's
right,
the thing.
Right.
It's
yeah, I'm not saying any of them are bad. Like, Sage Northcutt or Mickey Gall might be a world champion one day. Same with Van Zandt.
Okay, I would say, yeah, it's the doubleheader that has the most ambiguity about the talent level of the fighters. Sure. Yeah, I'm feeling that.
All right. One guy whose talent cannot be questioned in his last fight ever, maybe.
Oh. Well, you say his talent cannot be questioned, but I would throw you a curveball. Was he ever any good?
I'm glad you picked up on that. Uriah Faber against Brad Pickett. It should be the last fight for both guys, honestly. I think Faber beats him. Brad Pickett is a guy who was never very good. Faber, say what you...
I mean, Pickett can box, but...
Yeah, but he can't grapple. And I don't... Faber used to be, like, otherworldly in the scrambles with his grappling and everything.
Yeah.
And he's obviously not there anymore. But I still think he's able to do things that Pickett won't be able to do, which is mainly wrestle, and I don't think Pickett's gonna put up much resistance on the ground.
I'll save the Faber. That's like a Fedor Faber mix. That fighter would be, he'd be Fedor, actually. What would either acquire that individual, like? Faber does not have anything that Fedor would need, and vice versa. I guess ground and pound. So yeah, he'd be great in scrambles with vicious ground and pounds. That's Fedor for you. That was 15 seconds wasted time. I'll save the Faber career retrospective for next week after this event is over, because he is a guy I used to enjoy watching a lot, and he was super fun to watch. That I've soured on later in his career for no particular... I can't actually pinpoint why I've grown to sort of... I wouldn't say dislike him, but like him less, I guess. But I think he wins this fight. I think he taps him out.
And
next
fixed.
Week... And next week... Shut up. And next week, we'll talk about how great Uriah Faber used to be. Win or lose.
That's fair. Yeah, I think Faber wins. And the opening fight is Alan Jobin against Mike Perry. I don't know who these guys are.
Go with my boy, Jobin, who's probably definitely not related to Eve.
No, they have completely different spellings of their last names. One guy, Jobin, is 35, so up-and-coming prospect.
That's right.
And Mike Perry is 25. Feels like this is probably a showcase fight for Perry.
So we go with the age factor? Experience versus youth.
Perry is 9-0, and all of his fights are knockout finishes. So yeah, it's clearly a showcase fight for him, and I'm assuming he'll win.
Okay, I'm guessing that is the purpose as well, or the UFC just randomly matched them up together, which is far more likely, but also go with the guy who's 10 years younger.
Other fighters we've heard of on this card, Cole Miller is fighting, and he's not happy
about it. Cole Miller
is
still a thing?
Cole Miller buried the UFC for this card.
Is it a money-related issue?
Of course.
Oh, then he's right.
Yeah.
By default, he's right. I don't even care what his specific gripes are. He's right.
Well, he was supposed to fight at the Penn and Llama show, which was 2 months
canceled.
Ago. Yeah, it was canceled. And so he never got paid for that, even though he trained and everything. And then, you know, they pushed it back.
He's right, though.
Oh, I agree. And then they pushed it back 2 months, like... It's not fighting a week or two later where you're still fresh from your camp. Like, you basically have to redo
That's
your
another
entire
camp altogether. Yeah. You've lost a lot of money for no reason.
Yeah.
And it's not like now that he's fighting, he's going to make, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
What, like, do you think? Let's play. What does Cole Miller make? How much to show and win?
I can't see it being anything more than 1,200.
Really? It's more than that. He's been there for a while.
Okay, 20,000 at most. That's my prediction.
45. UFC 199 was his last fight. Cole Miller's payout was 33 to show, 33 to win.
I mean, seriously, but that is not a lot, though.
Oh, no. Considering he's been in the UFC he's only 32. He's been in the UFC since 2007, nearly 10 years, since he was 22. And he's making 33 for a fight. That's a lot of fucking years and fights to get paid possibly $66,000 per fight, and only half that if you lose.
Cole Miller is being ungrateful to one Dana White. Hear this. On that Ultimate Fighter season, I want to say five.
Yeah, that was the Penn Pulver season.
Yeah, that was by far the most talent stacked Ultimate Fighter season ever. I mean, that had Nate Diaz and Gray Maynard and a bunch of really like Joe Lozon and others. Manny Gamburian, fuck that guy, but Manny Gamburian. Am I forgetting anyone? People like had a bunch of
Wat
Myman. Matt Wyman. Yeah. Like, but seriously, Diaz and Gray Maynard, like, you know.
Yeah, alone makes it pretty fantastic.
Anyway.
I feel like there might have been another
I feel like I'm missing
season
somebody.
that had a lot of talent.
I mean, if you count, like, the first few couple of seasons. No, those didn't have a lot of talents, actually. No, I'll take season five over anything. Anyway. Cole Miller had a fight against somebody, and I think he got hit in the back of the head a lot. And he couldn't continue, but wanted to continue. Maybe continued, maybe. I don't actually remember what happened, but I remember the aftermath. The point is, Cole Miller was being too tough for his own good and trying to continue or actually continued, despite the fact that he couldn't. And ended up losing the fight, and he was crying, and Dana White walks over to console him. And I seriously don't remember why. I don't know why I remember this, because I've only seen it once. Dana White goes, "Never, kid, never put your health at risk, because you're worried people will call you a fucking puss, all right? You're anything but a fucking puss," and walks away. A fucking puss. He didn't have enough airtime to say the word pussy, so he had to sort of use abbreviations. A fucking puss. So you're anything but a fucking puss. I don't know why that story stuck with me.
I don't know why either.
Dana, but that was such a pointless story. There's not even there's not even a takeaway. But that just stuck with me. And what do we do on this show if not share random stories?
The other fight that I've heard of, Eddie Wineland against Takeya Mizugaki. Mizugaki is 32.
Dude, these guys still exist?
Yes.
Remember when Takeya Mizugaki gave Miguel Torres a tough fight and Frank Mir almost cried on commentary and no-sold everything Mizugaki was doing?
Both Mizugaki and Wineland are 32. That's insane.
Amazing. That is pretty amazing.
Absolutely insane. I mean, Wineland became the WEC bantamweight champion in 2006. And yeah, that Mizugaki and Torres fight was what, 2007?
No, it was later than that.
Okay, I think
it
2009.
Oh, 9, all right.
Yeah, but still, like, they've been around and for that long. And they're only 32. That's nuts.
That is pretty nuts.
How much do you think they're getting to fight?
You killed my nuts balls joke. Anyway.
What do you think Mizugaki makes?
Mizugaki?
Yeah.
25 at the most, and don't tell me it's more.
Nope, it's more.
What?
It's more than Cole Miller, actually.
UFC's a generous company. I don't know what these guys are complaining about. 40,000?
39 for Mizugaki.
Oh, close enough. All right.
Eddie Wineland, what's your guess on
45.
That?
45.
Might be in trouble. I can't seem to find the payouts for... Looking for his last payouts because he's fought on a bunch of Fox cards. So I don't know if they don't disclose the payouts for Fox. Here was two fights.
I don't think that has anything to do with anything. I think it's the commission. It's something related to the commission. That's why wouldn't you disclose the payout if it's on Fox?
I have no clue. But all right. I've got his payout from, that's 2014. I can't imagine it's much more.
Okay, we'll only have to assume, in light of what was revealed about Cole Miller and Takeya Mizugaki, Eddie Wineland can't possibly make more than $45 million. A million? Jesus.
Jeez.
Yeah.
What's your official guess?
45.
No, you're way too low.
Oh, really?
Yes.
60.
I said you're... All right, I fucked up the wording. You are way too high.
Oh, so 32.
21.
What? He makes $21,000?
Yes.
Jesus Christ. Does he even break even? After the taxes and after the...
You're forgetting the that Reebok train? Money. He's had a lot of UFC and right. WEC fights.
But, I mean, he has to sell all the socks and shoes they've given him, maybe. Remember that Dana White? That was by far the most bullshit Dana White excuse ever. Ever. When they were asked about the Reebok money and they're like, oh, you guys don't understand. It's all in cash. Like, we give them like apparels, we give them clothing, we give them shoes, socks. It's like, seriously? Did you just say that?
I'd much rather have the cash than. What am I going to do with a Reebok shirt besides wear it? I got people to pay. Do you think fighters pay their trainers and stuff in Reebok gear?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So that if that were to happen to me, I would literally choke one of my fighters with said Reebok shirt. All right.
Like, listen, I appreciate you helping me out for this camp. Got a big bonus for you.
Here's a Reebok hoodie. Yeah. I know it's gonna get cold outside. The weather is changing.
It's a winter. You need to bundle up. You need this Reebok hoodie. This is way more valuable than the $2,000 that I owe you.
And the holiday season is coming up. It's Christmas. I've chosen the color red just for you.
That's right. You get your option of four different colors.
Yep.
It's better than previously when you had to go black or white. There were no other options. At least now you can get green, red, or blue. And I think those are the only other options.
That's some creativity right there.
Yeah, remember when it was announced and they're like, oh, fighters, they're going to have their input. Like, they can create their own stuff and it's going to be
remember that?
And it's going to be like really cool. And their whole input was, at least for the first couple of years, do you want black or white? And what country's flag do you want on your gear? Brock Lesnar was like, fuck the US. I want Canada's flag.
And Conor McGregor chose Ireland naturally and they fucked up that flag as well. Or did they fuck up the map? One
they
or the
fucked
other?
Up the map, which was fantastic.
Oh, there's also Anderson Aldo. Remember?
All the name misspellings were...
Oh, Anderson Aldo is my favorite.
Gilbert Melendez was pretty good.
Gilbert was pretty good. Gilbert was pretty good. But Anderson Aldo is just...
The all-time GOAT fighter.
Oh, dude. Like, imagine Anderson Silva with Aldo's takedown defense? Jesus Christ. There's a hybrid fighter better than Fabor we're talking about. What would be, like, if you had to combine two, if you had to design a guy consisting of two fighters, so a hybrid, let's just say two. I don't want to turn it into Dr. Frankenstein. So two fighters to make the best fighter possible. Who would you combine?
John Jones and Anderson Silva.
Yeah, that is a really good one. I actually didn't think about that. But the moment you said that, I was like, yeah, that is... Holy shit.
I mean,
would he lose a fight ever?
No, there's no possible way.
Dude, imagine, that's one hell of a fighter. Like, imagine if the, like, imagine if somebody designing it trolls you and gives the fighter Anderson's wrestling and Jones is striking. But, okay, would that fighter lose? I mean, John Jones has...
I mean, John Jones' striking is still pretty good, though. Like,
yeah,
no one's...
That would still be a good fighter. If you give him Jones' length and stuff, that still would be a good fighter. Like, okay, the wrestling is a shame, but he still holds his own. But, yeah. Would he retire undefeated? I feel like he would. I feel like even his, like, at 38... I mean, Silva alone was winning at 38, 39 anyway.
Which fighter could you design that would give him a challenge? Like St-Pierre and Aldo?
But I feel like St-Pierre and Aldo, you've just created an inferior version of Silva and Jones. You know?
Yeah,
like,
I agree, but who else are you going to throw in there?
I'm thinking about it in terms of matchup. Okay, I would want Aldo for sure in terms of striking and chin and speed, reflexes. And yeah, like, who else, are you going to find anybody better than St-Pierre in terms of wrestling? No. I guess St-Pierre and Aldo, yeah. I was trying to be, like, a bit more clever and try to pick somebody that would, like, might cause stylistic matchups, but who, like, what the fuck would
Aldo, Aldo and Habib? Or am I overselling Habib's grappling?
Yeah, like, then I'll just pick George St. Pierre, who has, like, he's just a better wrestler, has better timing, like, everything. Combined striking and wrestling better, has better guard passing. The problem is getting there. Like, he's a better athlete than Habib. Like, yeah, Habib, what a weird choice. Like, you're Charles Barkley. You just picked Allen Iverson as your first. Like, not even Allen Iverson. You just picked Eric Snow or something. Okay, maybe that's harsh on Habib. Maybe not Eric Snow. Stephon Marbury. That's who you just picked.
Let me tell you who would beat.
Oh my god, you're making yourself laugh, and that is never a good sign. That is not a good sign. End this podcast right now. I don't want to hear this. The expectations are already way too high.
Matt,
you're only gonna end up disappointed, dude. This is your last chance. I'm trying to talk you out of it.
Matt Weidman.
Oh my Jesus fucking Christ! That was even dumber than I thought. I honestly had no idea it would be this dumb.
Or Royo Hamill.
Wait, what?
Royo Hamill.
Royo Hamill?
Yeah. Royal Chonin and Matt Hamill.
I wish you could see me right now. I swear I wish you could see me right now.
Matt Weidman would beat him. Anderson Jones would throw a kick and break his leg, or he'd troll and get knocked out. And if he did take him down, he'd get DQ'd for elbowing him improperly. You're talking about men who are 3-0 against Anderson Silva and John Jones.
Let's go back to George St. Aldo, for fuck's sake.
Let me
Imagine
tell you.
We've all fucked up a St. Pierre shirt and just sort of like George St. Aldo.
Let me tell you my other fighter that could beat.
I was so dumb to bring up this topic. What a goddamn mistake that was. Go ahead.
USADA.
What? How's that a hybrid?
It doesn't have to be a hybrid. I've thrown out the hybrid and given you something that actually exists.
Okay. Are we done here?
I make myself laugh so much.
Like, look, there are endless dumb jokes you can make. You can go like, you know what fighter I would combine if I was Wanderlei Silva? And I'd be like, wait, so you combine who and who? You'd be like, that's the thing, you'll never know. Wanderlei Silva. It could just be Wanderlei Silva. Or maybe it's Wanderlei combined with Thiago or Anderson. Who knows? Come on, you got like a ton of more dumb jokes to make. Let the song stay here all night.
I don't think I can top those two. That's the problem. I mean, I'm sure if I tried hard enough,
if you
I
can't
could.
Top those two, that indeed is a problem. Because seriously, that was mildly funny. God, between the Game of Thrones trade shit and this, you've been unbearable this week.
We're gonna play the Mike Goldberg video. I gotta find out which one it is, because there's legit like three of them on YouTube, but there are some that repeat.
It's a nice way to end this podcast, since we've talked a lot about Mike Goldberg, to show people why he's the all-time GOAT.
We'll be back next week talking about the best looking UFC on Fox card of all time, and oh, it'll be Christmas week. We need to do something special, I feel like.
We will. We'll think about something and come up with it.
Let's do the show drunk. One could argue that I've done these past couple of shows drunk.
Is next week is not Christmas week, is it?
Next week is Christmas week. Christmas is on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Christmas is 2 weeks from yesterday.
So Christmas Eve is on a Saturday?
Yes.
All right. Cool. Okay. Well, it is honestly, it's my favorite time of the season. So we'll come up with something. We'll think of some Christmas-themed MMA nonsense.
Can't wait. I'm sure I'll get your suggestions an hour before we go on air, even though you've had 2 weeks to think about it.
First of all, it's 1 week. Secondly, I'm not going to have a chance to put any suggestions in, because I think if you end up liking the idea and coming up with wacky theories, you're going to be just bombarding my my phone with dumb texts. So,
and that knows? Changes. From what I usually text you, how?
Exactly my point.
All right, we're going to play this fantastic Mike Goldberg video, and then we'll talk to everyone next week.
Hi again, everybody. I'm Mike Goldberg. Welcome once again to the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Well, hi again, everybody. I'm Mike Goldberg. Welcome once again to the Ultimate Defining Championship.
Mixed martial arts has one show and one show only. That is the UFC. That is the Super Bowl of mixed martial arts. It is fitting that they are here tonight to put this showcase event on, here where great heavyweights like Mike Tyson, George Holmes, and all have fought in years past.
One of the most talented fighters to ever enter the octagon is BJ Penn, the prodigy. But tonight,
a late change means he faces newcomer Wat Myman.
Yamamoto considers himself a grappler. He trains on his own. He is single. Be a very quiet building throughout it. It's almost like breakfast at Wimbledon.
And so basically, Rich Franklin told me that the bedtime story every night to George was, once upon a time, you're going to do X, Y, and Z. And he doesn't know if George definitely got the message or not, but it was his bedtime story pretty much every night for the last 6 months as he prepared to return to the octagon.
Wait a minute, Rich Franklin tucks him in?
No, he just tells him a story, then he leaves and lets his girlfriend tuck him in.
Nice.
Not
nice
Rich's girlfriend, George's girlfriend.
Aaron Simpson is the 30-something Randy Couture of the 40-something crowd.
What?
Efraín Escudero will bring it tonight, and I guess we will find out if comparisons for Felipe Nover to GSP and Anderson Silva are premature or not.
Yeah, we're going to have to find out. He's going to have to face really tough competition to be mentioned in that lofty altitude, you know? That's like them saying I'm a Joe Rogan. or something like that. All right, we are set to find out at 155 who will become the next Ultimate Fighter.
Michael Jordan-esque in his grappling skills is Travis Luter.
No. No, it's not. No.
He's not that
no,
good?
No, he's not that good.
Oh, okay. Kobe Bryant, maybe?
No, he's not that good. I don't know any other basketball player.
Never have an easy go when you go to the Miletich fighting system.
Come on, Chris. Worth it?
There you go. Good.
Pat has guys that pound on him day in and day out. I don't speak a Portuguese, so I cannot translate from the corner.
Speaking of Portuguese, that's Japanese, brother. Oh, really? Thank you.
Highly touted. You almost want to just sit back and watch, so could you, and soak it in. Diaz smells the opening. He's got it under now. Oh, he's got it. It is all over. No, sorry. Captain Joe. I apologize.
Yeah, it did look a bit.
You see him with the hand.
I've never heard you pull that on this song before.
That was close. Making the trip from Davenport, and there is twin brother Mark working with equally aged brother Matt.
Derek Carwin, all kinds of heavyweights in the house. All kinds of former fighters and actors in Steve Cold Stone. I'll tell you what, Austin, the Rock is... The Spider, Anderson Silva, the UFC middleweight champion, will fight at 205 pounds. He's got magnificent Muay Thai.
In a lot of different versions of mixed martial arts.
With two of the best from season 7 of The Ultimate Fighter, C.B. Dulloway made a bad decision, and now he gets a second chance to earn a victory tonight against C.B. Dulloway.
His precision is really precise.
Late kick to the midsection. Tito taking a book out of Chuck's chapter right there. Catches a quick jab.
That was a straight left.
Yeah, it was. Pardon me.
A right and a left. A right and a left again. It's all over. Vanderlei Silva beats. Vanderlei Silva beaten by Chris Leben.
We'll come to your job, and I bet you mess up too. Then we're going to make fun of you and Twitter it.